Hey, everybody. Good afternoon to you. It's about 10 seconds past noon time here on Education Talk Radio on October 10th. First day back to school after Columbus Day for a lot of folks. So I want to remind you, it is Tuesday, not Monday. Okay, I've been making that mistake all day. So welcome to today's show. We're going to talk about teaching coding to kids in early education, which is so cool. I kind of labeled the show, there's a new language out there we got to teach. I did a show a little earlier today about teaching languages, Spanish, French, all that sort of thing, Chinese. But there's another language out there, and that's coding. And although those other languages are incredibly important, this is the language of the future. And since we're supposed to getting kids ready to be able to exist in a 21st century world that is going to be like kind of like Star Trek, I think it's really important. So I got to give a big shout out to my friends Jacob and Susan over at PR with Panache, which is one of the PR firms, a great one out in Minnesota, handling nationally education all over the country. That's what nationally means. Okay. They've set me up with Dr. Marina Umashi-Behrs. And I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Marina. But she's a professor at Tufts University right near me. She's in Medford, Mass., I would assume. And I'm up here in Maine, in southern Maine. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. We have a new Facebook page. If you want to friend us over there, that's at facebook.com/EduTalkRadio. And the old Facebook still works, but we decided to make it a little more fancy schmancy. So it's EduTalk Radio. All right. Dr. Behrs is a professor at the Elliot Pearson Department of Child Study and Human Development at Tufts University. She heads the Interdisciplinary Developmental Technologies Research Group. Marina's research involves the design and study of innovative learning technologies to promote children's positive development. She's creator of the free, I think it's called Scratch Junior programming app, and Kibo Robotics, which we're going to talk about today. And she's co-founder and chief scientist over at Kinder Lab Robotics. Learning how to code in early childhood. Without further ado, let me bring on the one and only Dr. Marina Behrs. How are you, Marina? Nice to have you on the show. I'm Larry.
Hi, Larry. Nice to talk with you today.
Was I right? Are you in Medford?
I am in Medford. Yeah, I'm
there
in Medford on a sunny day, beautiful sunny day
today. Oh, it's
today.
Beautiful. And same thing in Maine, an hour from you. So it's absolutely perfect, I got to tell you. And I can't tell you how happy I am to have you on the show. And again, thank you, Sue and Jacob, for helping me put this together. I'm going to ask you the simple question. All right, I think I might have answered it already, but are you there? You've got a lot of static
I'm
right
here.
There.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm here.
Yeah, good. Marina, just you know this from a professorial point of view. Why do we need to teach kids how to code at an early age? And I know the answer. I think everybody does, but I want to hear it from the professor.
Yeah, well, so I'll try to give you from the professor's perspective, but also from the general point of view. If you look around, most of the objects around us today are smart objects. They are objects that can behave in different ways. So these are objects that have been programmed by someone. Your cell phone, your car, even your faucet. When you go out to the bathroom and you put your hands out in the airport or even in fancy schools, water
Absolutely.
Comes out. That's because there is a sensor, right? And someone has programmed
Right.
the sensor to detect when water comes out. Elevators, otherwise we'll be crushing everyone's legs. So most of our objects around today are smart objects. And when we have something that's smart, it means there was a smart person behind it. It means someone was able to program this object to behave in a certain way. So we know that kids learn best when they are young, and they learn about the world around them. And we don't want them growing up in a world full of objects that they think are made of magic. We want them to really understand how these objects were programmed, and even the fact that they have been programmed. And so we believe that coding is the literacy of the 21st century. It's not enough to learn how to read and write. We need to learn to understand what does it mean program an object. And, you know, if you look around, when we teach literacy, we teach in the early years. We learn how to read and write when we are 4 or when we are 5. Otherwise, it's too late. And the same should be true for coding. We want to do it when we're young and when kids are open and curious and they don't have stereotypes yet.
You know, the old joke, and I always make a joke that pretty soon a fetus will be able to program my remote. Okay, and you know that's a joke. Okay, but kids are getting younger and younger to learn this. And actually, I have to ask you this because it seems to me, and my kids are older now; they're in their 30s. All right, but it seems to me there's something innately natural about understanding technology. I'm just going to call it technology, and then behind that, coding. Mm-hmm. All right, and do you find that it's natural for kids to learn this? I don't know how else to say that, but it's an interesting question. They seem to get it so quick, and you know, it takes me an hour and a half to type out a text on my phone, and my son does it in 12 seconds. And what has changed? What has happened? Are kids innately naturally able to do this?
I don't think they're naturally able to do it. What happens is they're kids. And that's what allows them to be curious and to try things and not to be afraid of failure. And that's, I think, what you see a different attitude. It's not that they know how to do it. It's that they are not afraid to try and fail as adults we are.
Failure is important.
You know, right. And that's one of the biggest technologies. When we teach how to code, when we teach how to use technology to make things, to produce things, we're also teaching them to understand that they're not always going to succeed. And what's important is they need to try again and again and again and problem solve. That's one of the beautiful things of coding. So kids, you would say they are surrounded by technology, so they naturally know how to use technology. They don't naturally know how to produce technology. And when we're talking about coding, we are helping children understand how to produce, how to make their own projects. So, for example, with robotics, they can make an animal that responds to sound or to light, or
right.
They can create an animated car. So that's a little bit of a difference between consuming technology, using technology versus producing. And what we really want is kids to become the producers of the future technologies. And that involves coding.
It really does. And I mean, you said the word robotics. I want to swing over. I read to everybody that you're the co-founder, congratulations, and the chief scientist at Kinder Lab Robotics. All right. And it's kinderlabrobotics.com. If people want to check this out. But when I went over there before the show, and I'm seeing – this has struck me as really interesting. The main picture isn't a solid-state doodad with a million switches and all that and sitting by a computer. It's kids playing with blocks. Kids playing with blocks, all right? And explain to me, okay, why is – I have to just ask the question. Why is there two children – playing with blocks when we're talking about coding? And this is over Kinder Lab Robotics, where you're the chief scientist. This is so interesting to me.
So
tell me about this, Maria.
Yeah, so the idea that we have to program sitting in front of a computer using a keyboard, who says so? You know, that might be okay in the 70s or 80s or for grown-ups. But people,
making
you know,
me feel
children
old.
Are
Marina,
children.
You're making me feel old here. I got to stop you. You're making me feel old. Right? The Stone Ages, the 70s and the 80s. Go ahead.
Right. So when we're talking about young children and the keyboard robot that we produce at Kinder Lab is designed for young children, 4 to 7 years old, children are naturally, if you look at children around, they're playing with objects, and they're learning by playing with the objects around them. And if you go to good preschool classes or kindergarten classes, you'll see lots of wooden blocks. So why don't we use these blocks as tools for learning how to program? So with Kibo, what we decided is we wanted to make a robot that could be programmed without using any kinds of screens or any kinds of keyboards. We wanted kids to sit on the floor, to play around, to move around, to collaborate with other children. And these blocks are actually the instructions that tell the robot what to do. So if I want my robot to move forward, there is a block that's blue that will say forward. And it has a drawing because these kids not always know how to read. And if I wanted to shake, there's a block that says shake. And if I wanted to turn a red light on, there's a block for that. And if I wanted to repeat the same command 4 times, there's a block for that. So what we basically did is we created a tangible programming language for kids. So they can create a big sequence of commands or instructions for the robot. Then the robot has a scanner. And it can scan one by one, just like in the supermarket. Children are familiar with the concept of scanning, right? They go, they buy groceries, they scan. So that's what we're trying to do, bring programming into the everyday experiences of children. And so with his, they can put together a sequence of blocks that will tell the robot what to do, and then they scan it, and then the robot is not finished unless the kids decorate it and put their own imagination. We don't want all robots look alike. That's why when you see a picture of kids working with the Arkivo robots, you'll see a lot of arts and crafts and recyclables dressing up and decorating this robot. And, you know, they are engaging in all of the cognitive skills involving programming. They are doing problem solving. They are understanding sequencing. They are doing cause and effect. They are debugging, which is, you know, finding problems in their programs. But at the same time, they are playing around and they are real children.
Wow! And I know you can, but I have to ask this kind of rhetorical question. So basically, if you take these blocks and you'll learn these skills by doing, okay, a child will be that much ahead in understanding the code because they've learned it in a simplified manner. Would that be a good way to say this?
That's exactly it, Larry. You got it. It's just like math. When we start introducing kids to number sense through objects and all kinds of little blocks that they have in kindergarten classrooms to teach children about shapes and colors and numbers, and even letters, the alphabet letters, blocks for letters, it's the same thing for coding. But the difference here is that this actually works. It is a true programming language. So children can start learning. It is a full programming language. So children, it has ifs and repeats and sensors. So it can get pretty complex as the child, you know, wants. Right. And then they can, as they grow, and they are ready to use different kinds of interfaces, more complex robotic kits, they can do the transition. But what we are, what we want by having a programming language that's tangible, that's made of blocks, that's easy, that's fun, is we want to open the door for kids to learn at a young age. Because if they don't learn when they are young, it's going to be very hard later on. And unfortunately, a lot of our educational experiences with robotics and with coding start middle school and high school, and that's too late.
Yeah.
You're not going to get the girls. You're not going to get the minorities. Times of research shows that. So we really need to start in early childhood.
Well, I got to ask you a question because you're a girl, okay? You are. You're a girl. Okay, so Dr. Burrs, do you like Burrs? Do you like Burrs? Is that your last name? Say it.
Yeah, that's fine. Burrs, yeah, that's fine.
Burrs, okay. Okay, B-E-R-S. Okay, so yeah. Marina, all right. When you learned the code, you're a smart lady, quite obviously. You got a PhD, you're a Tufts University professor. You're a smart lady. But you didn't learn the code when you were a baby or a young child. You learned the code later, okay? Did you have stress when that happened? Was it hard for you to understand the basics of that? I mean, you're not a professor of quote robotics. You're a professor in education and education technology, right?
Yeah. So actually, I was lucky because
I want you, if you can, because it's rare I get this opportunity to articulate what the difference might have been. Had you learned, you would won the Nobel Prize yesterday, had you learned coding at a very, very early age as opposed to the more difficult time later? I'm curious about that. That must have been the thing that sparked you. That must have been the thing that sparked you.
So for me, if you think of dancing, and I love to dance, dancing involves steps and involves a choreography and involves making a sequence of commands so you can perform your dance. And a choreography is something pretty complicated. So actually, you won't believe it, but when I first learned programming, I learned it because I wanted to create a robot that could dance.
That's great.
So I wasn't interested in computer science because I wanted to send, some aircraft to the moon or wanted to solve some interesting, aircraft situation. I wanted to do things that I wanted to do as a girl. So in my case, I'm very stereotypical. I wanted a robot that could dance with me. I wanted a smart dollhouse for my Barbie dolls. So I was the traditional girl. And I was lucky enough that I was a child in Argentina, and there was this guy called Seymour Papert who had invented the first programming language for kids. That was called Logo, and that was, you know, the beginnings. And then, and I learned, he brought a pilot program to Argentina, and little that I knew that, you know, 20 years later, he was going to be my mentor at MIT when I came to study to be with him. But basically, what from the very beginning, as a girl, I could see that through computer science and through robotics, I could do the things I wanted to do as a girl. And that's what the experience I'm trying to bring through keyboard robotics and through all the projects we create in my lab here at Tufts. We want to provide both girls and boys with tools for them to create whatever project they want to create. It's like writing, like reading, you know? We want them to have the tools so they can make something they want.
And, you know, you keep saying that, you are exactly right. It's like reading and writing. I mean, and that's the interesting or the truly interesting thing going on. We tend to separate coding. I will teach the kids to read and writing and arithmetic. All right. But and you know, that was just part and parcel of what the schools were supposed to do. But we have to teach them this, too. This is as much a part of it as anything else. OK. And it's OK. I want to plug your book for a second. Is the book out yet?
Yeah, the book is out, and actually it's called Coding as a Playground, and it's
Thank
on
you.
Programming and Computational Thinking in the Early Childhood Classroom, and it talks exactly about that, about, you know, what does it mean to think of coding as a literacy? What is it? In which ways is it similar, in which ways is it different than reading and writing? And also the title, Coding as a Playground, how do we go about teaching coding in a fun, playful, developmentally appropriate way for young kids? We cannot do the same things we are doing for middle school or high school. That just will not work.
How much easier, and I think I know the answer to this, if we start teaching kids coding in early childhood, and are you talking about preschool, or are you talking about what grades?
Yeah.
When you say early childhood, what are you talking
about? Yeah, 4 years old.
4 years old, let's say the second grade, whatever. Okay. So when you do that, how much easier – okay, and this is interesting. You're a professor of child study. How much easier will it be as the kids really progress into coding? And my second question, which is a little more difficult, this gets the kids very engaged. They're really engaged in this. They start to get it. I can see that instantaneously. Okay, everybody, kinderlabrobotics.com. Okay, you can see that. So they're really engaged. All right. Will this carry over into the other subjects? I want the engagement that they have to make all their subjects exciting. All right. And that this is key stuff. And as you talk to teachers and educators that you work with, are they having a better time with the kids when the kids understand these critical skills and can actually do coding in first and second grade? Okay. Really learn this stuff. All right, and how much effect does it have on the rest of their education? Which I think it has tremendous effect because you're really teaching them critical skills. All right, but I'm just curious again from the professorial point of view.
Yeah, so so you ask a bunch of questions. So the first one is the issue when the kids
are
when they, no,
if
that's
you can
okay.
answer them all, if you can answer them
yeah,
all,
I will
give you another PhD. You don't have to worry. I will give you another PhD.
I'll try.
No problem. So try to answer
is,
them.
Kids at this age are not afraid. And, you know, the older we get, the more afraid we get and the more afraid of making mistakes. So it's definitely easy to start at a young age where we can teach them that learning is not knowing, but learning is discovering and reworking your mistakes. So that's number one. The number two is that what we teach when we're teaching to code is we're teaching a way of thinking that's abstract.
Yeah, yeah.
And that engages children in logical abstractions. And so the earlier we start to teach that, the better it is, because they are going to need abstraction for the rest of their lives. The third thing is when you create a sequence of code, it basically means giving instructions for something to happen in an order, for example, and that's called an algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving certain steps that need to happen in certain order. So that's called sequencing, and that's a precursor for writing, for reading, for numeracy. So you can really help children promote their sequencing skills, which are going to have an impact in the ease with which they learn how to read and write and which the ease they do math. So, but the trick here is that we want to integrate, as you said before, Larry. We don't want to separate coding into a different time of the day, isolated from different subject areas. So our approach to really engage children and engage teachers is to bring
you the last minute or 30 seconds. Nobody heard you. Say it again.
Oh, so our approach to really engage children and teachers is to be able to integrate coding into already existing subjects in school. So in kindergarten, it's easy because there is already agreement about the importance of project-based learning and integrated curriculum. As the children grow, you know, we start seeing more differences. But in early childhood, we celebrate projects. And let's bring coding into these projects. Let me give you an example. There's a wonderful first grade class that was studying the Iditarod race in Alaska, which is a race where, you know, the Siberian high skis go from one point to the other. And they were studying this in social sciences and in geography. They were looking at the maps of Alaska and the habitats and the animals. And so the teacher decided to include the keyboard robots into this, and the children recreated the Iditarod race with their own robots. And so that's kind of an example of how we really integrate. And, you know, one of the biggest problems that teachers encounter when they're working with keyboard robots is the children don't want to stop. They don't want to break for snack. Yeah. They don't want to go outside. They want to keep doing what they're doing. And that's actually a pretty good problem to have if we're talking about schools.
When do you mention to the kids, to the students, it's a great problem, by the way, when do you mention to the students, or maybe you mentioned it at the beginning, that this is coding? They probably don't even know that word. Okay, they know they're learning, quote, arithmetic. They know they're learning science. They know they're learning social. Do they actually know that they're learning coding? When does that get mentioned to them, that they're actually learning something? I don't know if that makes sense, but I think it does.
Yeah, no, we mentioned from the day one, from the beginning. And we are teaching, when we teach how to code, we also teach new vocabulary. And being able to label the activity you are doing is really important. We want to increase children's vocabulary. So we do teach them that this is coding, that this is computer programming. And we talk about what is programming and what is not programming. And we do a lot of games that involve programming. For example, we ask them to direct another friend to go from one part in the room to another place in the room, and by giving them sequential instructions. So they are playing. But we do bring the vocabulary very early on. We think it's very important that children can use the language of coding. Because as you said at the very beginning, coding is a language, right?
It is a language.
And we want to be able to teach them the meta language. And, you know, what is it that they're doing when they're coding?
It is a language. I just had the American Council of Teachers of Foreign Language on. Okay, they teach what has been traditionally been called, and it's a wonderful thing to know a second language, is language, period. Language instruction, French, all that sort of stuff. But this is a whole new language that the schools have to take in. And I have to say, it's not just STEM, which it is, it's everything. Which brings me to the question, okay? You said that a teacher used the KinderLab robot to help teach the Iditarod and the geography of Alaska, all right? I wanted to ask, the kids have already had KinderLab work, all right? Were the kids able to see that what they learned with their KinderLab robot, they were able to apply to another type of learning, i.e. geography, okay? Did the children see that, or did the teacher come up with that idea? Because the kids get it. But sometimes they're just not old enough to make the connection. And I'm curious they make the connection between what they're doing coding-wise and practical uses that they can have all along the way.
So one of the activities that's one of my favorite activities we do is when the children are programming their keyboard robots, they are programming their sensors, for example, to respond. So the robot will respond in a certain way if it hears a noise or if it sees a light. And the kids are surrounded by sensors. So we take a sensor walk. And after we teach children through their keyboard robot to identify what sensors the keyboard robot knows, so the keyboard robot has a light sensor, so it can do something when there is light or when there is not light. It has a sound sensor, so it can respond to sound. It can also respond to distance. So what we do is we take children around their schools or the neighborhood or wherever we are, so they can identify the sensors around them. And what's fascinating is that children start noticing sensors in places that they didn't even know they existed. And they are able to transfer that knowledge that they develop while working with the keyboard robot to the world around them.
Wow.
And that's exactly what we want. We want them to understand that coding is not just something that happens in the classroom, that coding is real world.
That's what I mean.
Someone has programmed objects. And what are these objects? And it's very, very interesting. Something, a little activity, another activity that we do that's fun is coding is about creating a sequence of steps, at least at this age. Then it becomes more complicated. So we do a little game. We ask them, before we work with the keyboard robot, we ask them to tell us how many steps they are involved in brushing their teeth. And they usually say, you know, 5 or 6. And after actually learn to program and they learn to use Kibo for whatever activity they are doing, we ask them again the questions. How many steps are involved in brushing your teeth? And what's amazing is they would say over 20 or over 25 because they are able to understand the level of granularity in what is a step and what are all the steps that are needed to accomplish a task. And that's abstract thinking. That's what we
it
want
sure
kids
is.
To do.
It sure is, and this helps them in math. I mean, it's just amazing. We're always worried about the kids, you know, eighth grade algebra and all these grade level standards we have, and when a kid and I had this trouble because I don't think well abstractly, but I didn't have anything like this, okay. And when you see this, and a teacher's running you through it, and you can see the practical application, suddenly it all comes together. Okay, because even though coding is its own language, it's like you said before, Marina, it's not separate. It's all integrated. We're not doing this so a robot can bang into a wall. We're doing this so we can go to Mars, okay, or we're doing this whatever, okay? It's that simple. I would have a time. If I had this, Marina, I would have a time machine invented already. That's what I'm telling you. All right, my last six have failed miserably. Okay, well, they went, but they didn't come back. I don't know. Something's going on. This is fascinating. I got to tell you, and to get this for children so early and take, not their natural ability, but an ability to really look at things and see how they work. I'm going to tell you something in a second. It's just fascinating. You have to look up, Marina, a short science fiction story, and you can look it up on the Internet. And it's called Mimsy Were the Borogroves. Mimsy were the Borogroves. And it's about a scientist from the future who sends tools from the future back, but he can't retrieve them. And they wind up in a children's yard in 1960. And the parents think it's a pile of junk. And the kids look at it, all right? And they start playing with it because, like you said at the beginning of the show, they aren't afraid to do that. It's an absolutely fascinating little short. It won several awards, okay? And it's the same thing you're talking about. Mimsy Were the Borogroves, and you will love that book, that little short story, okay?
Great. I will.
You got that there? I'm telling the professor she has to read that.
That's
the homework assignment for the professor, okay? In fact, wait a minute. I'm going to look that up. Well, I got you. It's going to take me 2 seconds, I think. Hold on. Now I got to look up who wrote it. Dentist office music while we wait. Let's see. So short science fiction short story by Lewis Paget. Okay? And all you have to do, and everybody, you want to see how kids think. This is the way it goes. All right? It's just absolutely. And by the way, it's Borogoves, not Borogroves. My apologies. Mimsy Were the Borogoves. All right, so check it all out, gang. It's great. This is terrific. Okay, you are really something. I got to tell you, Marina. You're really something.
Thanks.
Wow, really. It's just incredible. It makes so much sense. Let me tell everybody how to get it. Kinderlabrobotics.com. And when you see The kid's playing with blocks. You're not going to believe this. This is coding, and it works. Okay? You did good, Marine. Marina, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
It was wonderful. Great to have you.
Okay, bye.
Have a great
Thanks
day.
For having me. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. Wow. Unbelievable. Okay? Coding for kids 4 to 7 years old. Oh, my God. Unbelievable. Oh, what I missed by being old. All right, we'll archive the show at education-talkradio.org, tweet it out at EduTalkRadio, and check this out. I mean, this stuff is fascinating. KinderLabRobotics.com. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks so much for listening.